Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
I will start the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve each other's problems and recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off this morning, Emma, do you want to share?
Sure, thanks, Steve. My name's Emma, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Emma.
It's good to be here this morning, and it's a beautiful sunny day outside, and it's really good to see my friends in AA, and I didn't really feel like that when I came here. I guess my experience is that I drank for years and years, and I got in lots of trouble and caused trouble, but it was always kind of somehow, it was never as, I don't know, I just, you know, I could always carry on, I loved drinking, and drinking loved me, and I didn't always love what happened, but another drink would kind of push it far enough away that I could, you know, keep drinking and carry on. And I wasn't a quiet sit-at-home drinker. I remember this guy, Jeff, saying, and when I came to AA, I remember hearing him say that he was a social drinker and that he would get really drunk at home, and then he'd go out and unleash himself on the public, and that always used to amuse me. And I was a bit like that, and I'd go to the same bottle shop and ask for a discount because I was there often. You know, I wasn't hiding my bottles and things like that. And I think I never tried to stop drinking altogether. I actually don't think that crossed my mind, but at times, when things would get pretty bad, I did try and cut down. And before the first time, I ended up at a treatment centre, and I was living in Sydney. And I don't think stopping crossed my mind, but I did think that if I drank less, you know, things would be all right. And I guess that was kind of the first, well, it wasn't the first time, but it was probably, you know, I would do things like say to myself, I'm going to the pub on the way home, but I'm only going to have 6 beers, or, you know, I'm not going to take any pills this week, or I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And you know, it would never work. I probably tried to start hiding my drinking a little bit, like I was a really drunken, messy liability and I caused heaps of trouble and I couldn't be trusted. People didn't want me around. And I remember being a little bit offended about that by some people because they were like munters, you know, and they didn't want me around. And I was like, what? You know, because I didn't see myself like that, you know. I did not see myself like them. And I was like, what do you mean? You're mental, you know. Not long after that, I ended up back in New Zealand and I ended up in a treatment centre, and that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up in it was a detox, and as happens in detox, there was a girl I made friends with, and she was sleeping with some guy in the rooms, and he came to pick her up on the Sunday and take her to a meeting, and so I went with them. That was the first time I sat in a 12-step meeting, and it seemed to me there was about 500 people in the meeting, and I remember that I could only really look around the everyone was sitting in a circle, look at their knees. I was too, I guess, scared to look at anyone's faces, and there seemed like there was a lot of people there. And I remember that this lady, I think I managed to say I was like 7 days sober, and she patted me on the knee and said, like, well done. And or keep coming back or something like that, you know, the kind of things that people in Alcoholics Anonymous say. And I remember kind of being like, don't touch me, but also being sort of like, oh, wow, someone said something nice to me. And it was something about, like, doing well or coming back, and it had been a really, really long time since anyone had said anything like that. And I always remember that because she was really kind and she didn't know me. And, yeah, I didn't stay sober. Things had gotten bad and then they kind of got okay again in my mind pretty quickly. And, you know, I didn't really understand, you know, I guess I heard what people said, but I didn't really understand what being alcoholic meant. And I guess I kind of thought, oh, well, I'm not drinking anymore, so, like, what's the problem, you know? Why would I need to do all this? And, you know, I heard that there was people there who had many years up, and I don't think I even really thought anything about them. And then I spent, you know, the next few years kind of doing that, when I look back on it, that kind of awful thing of being a newcomer for years on end, really, and coming in and out and kind of knowing that there was another way to do things, but I could never quite seem to grasp a hold of it. But, you know, I think when I was ready to stop, and when I'd really had enough, I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous was here. And I think, you know, the thing that I heard, probably, you know, I'm sure people had been saying the same things all those years, but this time was that thing about, you know, the alcoholism is in me, that it's an illness, and, you know, that it's drunk or sober, I'm alcoholic, and that, you know, even when I put down the booze, I'm still alcoholic, and you know, and yeah, that's certainly the case. When I first got sober, I think that things probably got worse in some ways. You know, I wasn't drunk driving and I wasn't doing certain other things, but I was 33 when I came back this time, and I was really immature. I didn't really know how to behave. Every second word was the F word. And, you know, I really struggled with a lot of life stuff that probably, you know, you should know how to do by that age. I got myself a home group. That was a meeting I went to every week, and I joined a little meeting after the meeting to talk about who brings the tea and coffee and to do all those things. And, you know, I got a job to wash the tea towels, and then it was bring the biscuits, and I had a sponsor, and, you know, a woman in AA that was sober, and she helped me with, you know, I just talked to her, and we started going through the steps in the book and doing all those things. And and, you know, people just said, just keep coming, you know, things would happen and I'd have big disasters, and I did lots of things that, you know, I shouldn't do, or, you know, you're not, I don't know, it says all those things that you should do, and I was trying to do them, but I was still having lots of dramas in my life, and people just said, just, you know, don't drink about it, and keep coming back and keep trying to do all those things. And I guess I didn't feel that way at the time, that I had no friends, you know, but, like, I no one, you know, that thing about no one wanted anything to do with me, but it was actually quite fortunate, because you know, there's three sort of old friends from my life, my old life, that I'm kind of back in touch with now, but at the time, even they were, like, you know, they were over it and over me. And it was quite fortunate, because I had nothing to do, I had no job, and I just went to AA things, and I followed my sponsor everywhere, and I did lots of AA things, and it gave me, I think, a good grounding, and that thing, you know, because I was the type of person that would go to a meeting and I'd be like, oh, this is great, you know, and blah, 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 and then I'd go home, and an hour later I'd be out there smoking going, oh, I don't know about these people, they're all a bit weird, and, you know, like, my head was vicious, and I needed that constant thing about, I'm alcoholic, you know, and, you know, that I had no other good ideas either, you know. I was always someone that could kind of, you know, pick myself up and carry on and move to Australia and do this and do that, and, you know, and I just was, like, out of everything, really, and it was the best place to be. And, you know, today I've got I've got a really good life, sober, and, you know, it's maybe not like how I thought it was going to be, but it's just those things, you know, and I still struggle with some of those life things I struggled with when I came in, but, like, having, you know, having a job and just having a little place to live and paying my bills, and actually they all are things that are quite fulfilling, even though, you know, I used to work nights in bars, and why would you want to get up in the morning and go to work at 9 o'clock? Like, that sounds terrible, you know, and things like that. And actually all that stuff is really good. And I for the most part, you know, I feel pretty peaceful about things. And, you know, it's lovely to come along to things like this and, you know, see my fellow AAs, and I have a couple of sponsees these days, and, you know, that's awesome, and try and help them along and, you know, share all my bumbles in the program so that they don't feel alone. And, you know, I remember my sponsor saying something about all those things that you feel embarrassed about and shamed about and all that will actually be useful one day because you're about to share them with someone else. And at the time I remember thinking, oh, I don't know about that. I'd rather keep a lid on all those things. But, you know, that's been true. And that thing as well that, you know, when I came here and, you know, God and a higher power was talked about, and I was really desperate at the time, and I was willing to, you know, it wasn't a stretch to say that I couldn't do anything about my alcoholism and my drinking, and that no one else could either, because that had all been tried. And I guess, I like, over time, you know, that thing about prayer and that thing about knowing that, like, sometimes there's only things that can be relieved by that, you know, and that, you know, I've got to keep that relationship up. And, yeah, so I'm fortunate to have been, you know, I don't know, found or introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be sober today and have a really good life. Thanks.
Thanks, Emma. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the chapters, chapter 5, is titled How It Works, and I'll read that now. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was null until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God, and may you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing, and we stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress, and we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C. That God could and would if he was sought. So that's the how it works, the chapter How It Works of Alcoholics Anonymous. Continue on with the sharing. Kelly, do you want to share?
Yeah, hi, my name's Kelly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kelly.
Yeah, it's nice to be here today. And, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I remember as a kid watching a family member, and my whole determination was to never be like them. And I think when I was about 11 or 12... I hated the behaviour that come with alcohol in our house. But I remember kind of looking I remember standing in the hallway and looking into someone's eyes and kind of seeing that they sort of weren't home, you know, that look. And I, like, right inside me, so it stirred something. I kind of liked the idea of how they kind of weren't there. Like, I thought a lot after that about what that would feel like. When I had my first drink, I got myself into immense trouble. It was humiliating and embarrassing, and I didn't think about not having a drink the next day. I didn't think I'm never going to do that again. I got rid of the people who saw. I stopped seeing those people, and That continued a pattern for me. And what happened very quickly is I was probably a lot worse than the people I had spent my whole life trying not to be like. And whenever I took a drink, it could be really, really funny, or really, really adventurous, or it could sometimes be life-changing. You know, I'd wake up the next day and I'd made decisions or done things that changed my life or changed my relationships, and you know, changed who I was, I guess, in lots of ways. I'd wake up and I'd drunk away another moral, you know, and I was one of those people who I'd wake up with that feeling of guilt and shame and remorse, and I become really good at getting rid of it fast, like keeping on the move, not thinking about it, not putting myself back around the people who might talk to me about that. That was a big thing for me. Like, when people did try and talk to me about my drinking, I got rid of them. I felt really angry when people talked to me about my drinking, and you know, one of the things for me was the trouble and the consequences, I guess. Like, I wasn't particularly interested in stopping drinking, and I didn't really want to drink like other people. Like, I remember thinking that people... I knew I drank alcoholically. My family had always done it. But I sort of... I had this idea in my head that people that didn't drink like me didn't know what freedom was. They didn't know how to let go of themselves. You know, that was the great story I told everyone, and they probably didn't, and that's marvellous, isn't it? Because they didn't get into all the trouble I did, and they didn't get arrested, and they didn't end up with no friends, and they didn't end up, you know, fired, and they didn't end up all these things. And but yeah, I would take a drink, and I would feel bulletproof, and I felt like no one could hurt me and that I was the boss of everything, and that I could be whatever I wanted in the world, you know, like, and it was the great illusion, I guess, of my drinking. And I remember, you know, like those mornings looking in the mirror and not being able to look back, because my eyes were so dead and I could see all that stuff I'd done, you know, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And after some drinks, I'd go into the toilet at a bar or something, and I thought I was absolutely wonderful, you know, like, it was just that total difference. And when I wasn't drinking, I was scared and shy and had a lot of anxiety. And when I had a drink, I was in the middle of the room, usually on the table, but I was always in the middle of the room. And so there was lots of things for me. And I loved alcohol. I loved the people who drank alcohol. I didn't like people who didn't drink properly. I didn't understand people who wanted to go home at the beginning of the night. I was one of those people where the drinking stopped whenever it stopped, you know, like I'd start and I'd try and find place after place after place to keep drinking until it ended. And I woke up in all the wrong places with all the wrong people. And you know, as I got older, I guess what happened is that I started hanging out with older and older people at one stage, and then younger and younger people at another stage, trying to find places where my drinking was okay. And I was listening to MSU before, and it's funny, isn't it? Because I ended up in this this sort of seedy little bar in Grey Lynn. It was tiny. And there was this guy there from the streets who used to drink there. And he'd sit there and he'd drink. And I used to go up there because I'd run out of friends, and I used to drink with him. And one day he told me he didn't want me to drink with him anymore because he didn't like how I drank. And I remember, like, walking out of that bar and having that same thing of, like, but what are you talking about, you know? Like, you're a gutter drunk and I'm a young woman, like. But, yeah, I drank, you know, like, I drank in places where I ended up very lonely, and I don't think I always realised that, like, I ended up in places like that, or I ended up in dangerous places where people were doing all sorts of things and drinking was like the last worry in the place. And I too got kicked out of all those places in the end. I was a liability. Twice in my drinking I did things that were so harmful to myself and others that I had that moment, you know, where I was really petrified and really wanted to do something. And both times my answer was to leave the country. So once I left New Zealand and once I left Australia, both times my answer was to leave the country. And I remember both times really clearly. I was very clear that I was an alcoholic and it wasn't okay. I knew my drinking wasn't okay. I knew it was destructive. I had that moment of clarity, you know. And I, one of those instances, I knew that I was in places that I couldn't stop going to when I drank, and I was going to end up dead. Like, and I had quite a lot of knowledge in those two windows, and I, you know, and I set off to start life somewhere else and try and be different. One of those times, I did about 3 days and thought, oh well, that was quite good, wasn't it? I'm probably all right now. And I'd been really desperate, eh? And it just took 3 days for that insidious disease to tell me different. You know, and the second time I got drunk on the plane, like, I don't think I got off the, you know, like, out of the airport. And, you know, and it's always been like that for me. And I ran away from home when I was 13 years old. I'm really stubborn. I'm a really stubborn person. And I just could never understand it, eh? Because there was times where I... like we shared before, where I kind of, you know, I was going to drink, but I wasn't going to go there, and I wasn't going to go to that place afterwards, and I wasn't going to end up around those people, and I wasn't going to do this, and I wasn't going to do that. And then I'd have a drink, and I'd decide that all of that wasn't that bad, and it was okay to do that stuff. And magnetically drawn, you know, to the other alkies. I reckon I could go into any bar and I'd find the alcoholic who was the biggest problem within 5 minutes, and they'd be my best friend for that night, you know. We'd be long lost buddies. So yeah, that was kind of what it was like for me. At the end of my drinking, I was petrified, because even when I was really, really, really drunk, all that mental stuff, all that disturbance, the shame, the guilt, the that delusion I had, all of that was going around and around in my head, and alcohol wasn't shutting it up. And I could hear what people were saying, and I could see how they saw me, and I was disturbed all of the time. The drinking had sort of stopped working, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I knew I drank alcoholically. I didn't know what had happened to my mind. And I woke up one particular morning, and the police were everywhere. I'd boarded up the house for reasons that make no sense. My family was standing outside, who I hadn't really had anything to do with for a long time, looking like quite appalled and embarrassed about me. And someone put a protection order on me because I was so crazy when I drank. And I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous at a meeting that evening. I didn't really know what it was. I don't even really remember how I sort of ended up going. But I went to that meeting, and, you know, it wasn't my cup of tea. People were sitting around in a circle. People were sharing their stories. I didn't think honesty was a very good idea, and I didn't think you should tell people what you did wrong, so I didn't really understand what they were talking about. They chanted that serenity prayer like in the movies, and I was thinking, oh my God, this is what it's come to, you know. And and there's that, you know, oh, my name's Kelly, I'm an alcoholic, hi Kelly, and like that stuff was like, but I had that feeling like there wasn't anything else, like I didn't know what else to do, and I sort of felt suicidal but didn't want to kill myself. And so what I did is I listened in that meeting, and this man shared, and he had bare feet and he looked like no one that I'd ever sort of hang around really, and he shared about alcoholism from the inside out. He knew what it looked like from the inside out, and he shared about that deep loneliness even when you were surrounded with people, and that you start drinking and you get thirsty. The more you drink, the thirstier you get. And he talked about that shame and guilt and remorse. And I knew he knew. And I went to meeting after meeting after that, and I don't know what happened. I feel like I woke up in AA like 3 months later, and that I'd blindly been going to all of these meetings that weren't my cup of tea, that I never would have gone to any other time in my life, and that I was listening to what those people said. And, you know, that's what's amazed me, is that when I stopped drinking, it wasn't okay. I didn't know how to be without drinking. Absolutely no idea how to be without drinking. And Alcoholics Anonymous stood with me and walked with me and gave me that environment where they could show me how to do that, you know. And without that, I don't know what I would have done. When I stopped drinking, I felt like my personality had gone, my friends had all gone, and I didn't know what to do. I thought you had to take up sewing and get a good cardigan. But yeah, so I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for the 12 steps and sponsorship and all of that stuff, and it made no sense to me in the beginning, but I've just done it anyway, and it's been amazing. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. If you've identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and under the meetings list there's a list of all meetings right throughout Auckland and up and down the country. Or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.